Yes, I want to testify. Parliament's Funkadelics. Coming up, Parliament's, I should say, Calvin Simon's birthday today, born in 1942, who's a singer with both the Parliament and Parliament Funkadelic. And it's one of my favorite kind of sounds. It's good having fun today on the air with our music. And speaking of I want to testify, we have a man who's about to testify here on the air with us. State Senator Brian Frosch is in the studio. He represents the 16th District in Montgomery County and is a candidate for Maryland's Attorney General. And Brian, welcome. Good to have you in the studio.
Thanks for having me, Mark.
And folks, you can join us here at 410-319-8888. Write to us here at steinershow@gmail.com. I can log on to our Facebook pages or tweet me at Mark Steiner, 410-319-8888. So, Brian, this is one of these elections, I think especially because it was done on June the 24th for election day, which makes it difficult for people to wrap their hands around an election.
Right.
That people don't seem to be paying a close attention to the AG's race as one would want, or you would want,
well,
or anybody would want, I think, who's into this.
That is true, but that is also what happens historically. People don't pay attention to the Attorney General's race until the very end of the campaign. And even then, there's a big drop-off from people who vote for governor to people who vote for Attorney General because they just aren't sure what the Attorney General does and who the candidates are.
Now, all three of you could be aligned liberal to progressive kind of spectrum of you're thinking about where America, where the state should be, what an AG's office. So how do you separate yourself out? What is essentially the difference between a message you might give that John Card and Aisha Braveway might give in terms of what you could do that they couldn't do?
Well, the thing about the Attorney General's office, and I think the thing that distinguishes me, the question people should ask is who has the experience, the skill, and the judgment to be the chief legal officer of the state of Maryland, to give wise counsel to the state and to be an advocate for the people. And I've been a practicing attorney for more than 35 years, named best lawyer and one of the best lawyers in America by U.S. News and World
Report.
I've been in the General Assembly for 28 years and chaired the Senate Judicial Proceedings Committee. And I have a long list of issues that I've been deeply involved in and very successful at getting accomplished.
So let's talk about some of those issues. And folks, join us here. Show some life and interest in this AG's campaign because I think it's important. We're going to have all the candidates on here. We invited them on for a debate, but their debates have been set, so they can't do that. But we are going to participate in this and maybe participate in one of their debates. Join us here at 410-319-8888. We want you to join us here with this conversation. Write to us here at steinershow@gmail.com. There are certain things I'm very curious about. One of the issues that came up during the debate you did have in College Park.
Right.
And Aisha Braveboy raised this debate and raised this question. I'm going to talk about it directly. We talked a bit about this when you were on here the show last, which was the whole legal issues surrounding historically black colleges and universities.
Right.
Around what schools can be created at what universities and colleges, and that affects the funding and the stature and standing of black college universities in Maryland. And whether when there's two sides, there's a state making its argument, there's HBCUs making the argument. What do you do as Attorney General?
You know, this is a situation that actually occurs with some frequency because the state departments disagree with each other. The Attorney General represents every state agency, board, task force, and commission, and the components of our higher education system that are funded by the state. So in this case, the Attorney General is on all sides. You have to get the state to obey the law, and that's the guiding principle, I think, for the Attorney General. With respect to this specific case, Judge Blake said that the parties needed to go mediate their differences. And this is an area in which I think I excel. I work across the aisle. I'm able to bring people together, find common ground. And if I were Attorney General today and in this matter or it's still going on when I take office, that's what I would be trying to do here. You don't want components of state government fighting with each other, and that's really what's going on here. Historically, black colleges and universities have an extremely important role to play in our higher education system, and we need to help them do that. And there's no reason why the traditionally white institutions and the HBCUs can't help each other.
So, I mean, does that mean you would not take the case? You would not fight for the state of Maryland against HBCUs? Does that mean that you already have some ideas about what your response would be as kind of one of the constitutional interpreters in the state government?
I think the situations in which the attorney general has to walk away are ones where there's a where the state is clearly in the wrong and violating somebody's constitutional rights. And the best example that I can give you is that when Steve Sachs became attorney general in the 1970s, he was faced with a series of lawsuits by representatives of adults with developmental disabilities or mental illnesses who were being warehoused in state institutions, I mean, jail-like conditions, unsafe, unsanitary. And he looked at the cases, he looked at the state, and he said, we can't do this. This is unconstitutional. I'm not going to defend these cases. We're going to let these people out, and we're going to find places for them in the community. Now, the first part worked extraordinarily well. We're still struggling 30 years later to figure out how best to help those
people in communities.
Exactly.
So, I mean, so as somebody who's been active like that and in the state legislature for all these years and pushing lots of and kind of even behind a lot of kind of very critical issues in human rights, civil rights, and the environment, so what can you do as AG? I mean, how does that translate? Do people look at that office and now what, other than running a bureaucracy?
Well, it is a bureaucracy. There are more than 450
right.
assistant attorneys general. But the attorney general has a huge role in the way state government works, and there are great opportunities for me, I think, to make a difference on the issues that matter to Marylanders. One of my friends said to me when I got started, he said, hey, you know, you're a senator. You got a safe seat. You chair the Judicial Proceedings Committee. Why give that up to be attorney general? And the answer is I can make more of a difference as attorney general than I can as even chairman of the Judicial Proceedings Committee on issues like public safety, environmental protection, consumer protection, equal opportunity. It's a bully pulpit. Of course, you can go and you can advocate for good things, but you are the people's lawyer, literally, or that's at least the way I see the job. I want to be the people's lawyer. I think I can make Marylanders' lives better, and I can help keep them safe.
So let's talk about how you would do that. I mean, one of the things that happened in this last state legislative session before it started, when Judge Bell was still head of the highest court in Maryland, they decided that people have a right to a lawyer
right.
at their initial bail hearing to unclutter the jails and give people a right to have an attorney to talk to. That if one of our children was arrested, we know we'd have a lawyer there in a heartbeat getting our kid out of jail no matter what.
Yep.
Right?
Yep.
So I was then taken aback when I interviewed the president of the Senate, the governor, all of whom made it clear that they didn't like the decision and they were going to circumvent that decision as best they could to figure out another way because they didn't think it was a good idea and they thought it was – they didn't agree. So that would be like something the U.S. Senator or President of the United States saying, well, Supreme Court may have said this as much – I'm not going to follow what they said. So how could that be? And B, what would you have done if you were AG?
Well, let me tell you what I tried to do as a legislator because the issues came through my committee and I introduced a bill to adjust to the court's decision, which I think was – fundamentally the right one. If your liberty is at stake, you ought to have counsel before you're deprived of it. The problem is we have a two-tiered system in Maryland. We have district court commissioners who make the first cut. People come in. Do they get released? Do they get held over? And if they get held over, then they go before a district court judge who makes the same decision all over again and sets conditions for bail or release. And that's wasteful and unnecessary. I thought there was and ultimately the state prosecutors, public defenders, the people who represented the plaintiffs in the DeWolf decision, the governor, the local correctional facilities all agreed that the way to do it was to get a scientific tool, and there are several that have been developed and over broad scales of cases. One in particular, the Arnold tool, looked at 1.5 million cases. And they can determine with a fairly simple set of questions whether somebody's likely to offend if they're released before trial and whether they're likely to show up for trial. And we could abide by the court's decision, I think, use that tool as a first cut, release 50% of the folks, mostly on their own recognizance, and then have a district court judge sit and say, okay, you know, you're questionable. I'm going to make you wear a GPS device, or I'm going to release you on bail, or I'm going to hold you over. And I think that was the right approach. It would have saved the state a lot of money, and it would have achieved the objective of keeping people out of jail who don't need to be there, and of having people have counsel at the first instance when their liberty is at stake.
Now, the President Attorney General Doug Amsler actively opposed this lawyers' bail, had the AG's office oppose it during all the court proceedings. He made no bones about his opposition to it. I mean, so I'm curious, because there are very few ways for we, the voters, to judge what you, the candidates, would do were you in office, other than looking about what has happened and what would you have done if, right?
Right.
So what would you have done if you were then AG when this came up? Would you be fighting against the lawyers at bail as a representative of the state, or would you have said, no, this is something we can't fight against, or something else, or is there an alternative?
I would have tried six different things first. I mean, six different things before defending it. I would have met with the plaintiffs. I would have met with the same parties that I met with this past session without having the Court of Appeals gun to our heads. And I would have said, look, how can we work this out? How can we make sense out of this system? How can we administer justice better, more fairly, and more efficiently without having to have attorneys at two levels of bail review making the same decisions? So I think I could have brokered a compromise that would have been similar to the legislation that I proposed this past session.
So a couple of the issues have come up. I'm curious, you know, again, as an attorney general this last session, this may be not something that's earth-shaking to many people unless they just follow what we've done on this show. But they had the phosphorus management tool, the PMT, which was going to regulate, be able to let the state really regulate how much phosphorus and nitrogen goes into the bay by having it on everybody's farm. Was an agreement. It was agreed to by all of the all the parties, environmentalists, the farmers' representatives. Everybody kind of said, yes, we'll do it. And then it was allowed to be put off. Now, as Attorney General, I don't know what role the Attorney General plays in this, but let's talk about that, because the environment is a big portfolio under the AG. So what's your response to that?
Well, I'm not sure the Attorney General has a direct shot at when and how the phosphorus management tool gets implemented. But the Attorney General has counseled the Department of Environment and counseled to the governor and has a role to play in nudging the government in the right direction, at least, and has a great pulpit from which to advocate policy. The phosphorus management tool is absolutely critical to the health of our bay. Phosphorus is one of the two main pollutants that are destroying the bay. They're the reason that we have, in some summers, a dead zone that's 80 miles long. And so as Attorney General, one can say, look, if we don't do this, the EPA has put us on a pollution diet. They've told Pennsylvania, Maryland, Virginia, you guys have got to reduce the amount of phosphorus, the amount of nitrogen that's going into the bay. If you're not doing it with a phosphorus management tool, how are you going to do it? That is probably one of the most cost-effective means of achieving the objectives of the Clean Water Act that we're required to achieve by the Clean Water Act and by the EPA. So as Attorney General, I'd be sitting at the table saying, guys, what's your alternative to this? If we're not going to do the PMT now, what are we going to do and when are we going to do it? Because we got to hit these targets and they're right around the corner.
Part of this, obviously, this race is very political, as all races are in politics. I was watching what was going on at this first debate you had, the three of you in College Park. One of your first things you said coming in was how you're always there, that you always attend. I'm trying to find this exact quote, but
right. I show up for work and I work hard.
So what was that an allusion to?
Well, John Cardin doesn't. to be blunt, he missed 75% of the votes in the House Ways and Means Committee, and there's no excuse for that.
So part of people trying to figure out who to vote for is kind of separating out, getting an understanding of who people are and why. This is a big issue that came up with John Cardin, who I've known for years and has been on the show many times, to have missed that many votes.
Right. I mean, I don't know another instance like that. I mean, there have been people who've been very seriously ill and have perhaps missed that many votes. But I honestly can't name one. In my experience, and this is 28 years long, I don't know of anybody who's missed that many votes. And the committee votes, that's where the work of the General Assembly gets done, especially in the House of Delegates, where you can't get an amendment on the bill on the House floor. It's very difficult to kill a bill on the House floor because
it has to be all done in committee.
It's done in committee. And that's where the bills are shaped. They're amended. They're killed. They're passed. But that's where the real work gets done. And to miss committee votes is a waste of an opportunity, but it's also a dereliction of duty.
410-319-8888 is the number here. Join us. Your thoughts. Brian Frost is with us, state senator from Montgomery County. He is one of the three Democratic candidates running for attorney general. June 24th is the election. We're doing our utmost to bring candidates here to the airwaves, maybe bring them back again, because this is it. You know, we have the primary, and then, of course, there's the general. But this is one of the most important elections we'll have this year. It's on June the 24th. 410-319-8888 is the number here. Write to us at steinershow@gmail.com. Your thoughts and ideas about who you'd want to vote for and why and what the issues are that are important to you. So one of the things that I think people are also curious about is that, you know, you run for attorney general, and once in office, people can stand out as attorney general or not.
Yeah.
Right?
Absolutely.
So I'm curious who you look to in the past as examples of that and what that means for you. I mean, how you look at the next 4 years and what would that mean for reorganization, for rethinking, if there has to be a rethinking of what would be the agenda switching in an administration, Brian Frosch.
Well, let me say this. You know, Elvis Presley went to audition at Sun Records, and they said, "Who do you sound like?" And he said, "I don't sound like nobody." And so I would say I'll be different from every other attorney general that we've experienced. But I have to say I'm very proud of the fact that two of my heroes, the former attorneys general, Steve Sachs and Joe Curran, have endorsed me. And those guys are, I think, models of what a great attorney general ought to be. I mentioned before Steve Sachs really deinstitutionalizing people who are mentally ill and developmentally disabled. Joe Curran took on the tobacco manufacturers at
That's
a
right.
time when it was unthinkable almost. It was a moonshot. He took them on. He got more than $4 billion for the state of Maryland to help people who are suffering from smoking-related illnesses and to start smoking cessation programs. He really improved the health of all Marylanders as a result of it. And so there are great things that attorney generals can do. Providing wise counsel to the state agencies is the least noticeable but extremely important. And that's why I say, you know, an attorney general has to have experience, skill, and judgment.
So given that, I mean, there must be a certain level of political frustration in the campaign when you see polls that after all the endorsements you have, being out there on the campaign trail, I haven't seen any recent polls, I don't know if you have, but that show that that you're behind the polls and Cardin's ahead in the polls and Aisha is somewhere in the middle.
Well, I mean, the truth is, Mark, undecided is ahead in the polls.
They are. And every poll for governor or attorney general, they're way
yes.
ahead in the poll. What does that say?
Yeah, well, it says that people haven't tuned in yet. And in the polls for attorney general, it's much more pronounced than it is even in the governor's race. I mean, you're talking about a majority of the people who are being polled saying, "I don't know." And and so I'm not frustrated. I'm expecting that as people tune into this race, they'll see that I've been endorsed by organized labor, by the AFL-CIO, the SEIU, by Progressive Maryland, by the environmental groups, the League of Conservation Voters, the Sierra Club, by Equality Maryland, CASA de Maryland, by the teachers, the Maryland State Education Association. And I think as those facts sink in, and I got a great endorsement from the Washington Post 2 weeks ago.
I saw that today. Yeah.
So, you know, as people start to tune into the race, and when they start to make their decisions, I'm very optimistic that we're going to win it.
So I'm also very curious. I think listeners are very curious. Voters are curious about, you know, the AG's office. And they watch Attorney General Gantz over the last 4 years,
Eight years.
Yeah. Time gets all squashed in.
It only seems like 4 years.
It only seems like four years. And so I guess maybe that's one of the reasons people are having a hard time putting their hands around this race and trying to figure out why is it important and who's there.
Well, for the reasons, I mean, look at what Steve Sachs and Joe Curran have done. Doug Gantzler got $1 billion-plus settlement from the financial institutions to help people who have lost or are in danger of losing their homes in foreclosure. And the attorney general really plays a very important role in keeping Marylanders safe and improving their lives.
So you just mentioned mortgages, and we've seen the mortgage rates going up. And Maryland still has one of the highest rates in the country of foreclosures.
Yeah.
So what do you do about that as AG?
Well, in the General Assembly, I before the subprime crisis, I introduced laws that outlawed foreclosure scams. Attorney General enforces those laws. I led the Senate through the reform of our foreclosure laws, which were the fastest in the country. That's a good thing if you're a bank. It's not a very good thing if you're a homeowner. But we gave homeowners more of an opportunity to cure their defaults, to negotiate with their lenders, and we gave them better notice. And the next attorney general is going to have to keep an eye on the practices of the financial institutions in that context, but in the context of debt in general, because I think you can see the same types of crises looming in other forms of debt. Credit card debt, Americans owe trillions of dollars to their banks. And when they're delinquent for a short period of time, 6 months, banks sell them for pennies
right.
on the dollar.
Right.
And when we hit the next pothole, I'm afraid you're going to see the same kind of stuff that you saw in the subprime crisis.
So what do you do about that as Attorney General? What can
you
do?
You hold the creditors to the law, because what happened in the subprime crisis is they came in and they signed affidavits saying these guys owe money, and they had no idea whether they really did or didn't. And you'll see the same thing, but even worse, in credit card debt, because the banks sell those debts for pennies on the dollar and then and say specifically, we're not making any warranties that Frosch or Steiner owes this money, but go chase him if you want. And ultimately, when they chase them, they have to sign an affidavit saying Brian Frosch owes me X dollars or Mark Steiner owes me X dollars, and they don't really know. You might have paid them off. I might have been discharged in bankruptcy. Might have made some payments. So, you know, the next attorney general is going to have to be on top of that.
So does that mean you'd file a lawsuit? What do you have to do?
If I see those practices, false affidavits being filed, absolutely, yes.
So does that mean – what about the executive investigative units inside the AG's office?
Well, there are a series of different investigative units. I mean, there's an environmental crimes unit. There's a gun trafficking crimes unit. There's a consumer protection unit. And all of those attorneys enforce our laws. The environmental folks go out and – prosecute polluters, and the consumer protection folks are protecting you and me and homeowners and renters and credit card debtors against the kinds of practices that we see on a too frequent basis. And the attorney general is literally the people's lawyer.
So this is just the beginning of the end of this campaign.
Or maybe the end of the beginning.
Or
end
of the beginning. And we look forward to being part of the next debate. We look forward of having perhaps you back. We can find the time between now and the end of June to have you all back to back, at least, to have your voices heard so people can see what is going on and who you are and what you're thinking.
Love to do it.
It's always good to see you, Brian Frosch.
Thanks for having me, Mark. Good to see you, too.
Brian Frosch, state senator from Montgomery County, is is also candidate for Attorney General of the State of Maryland, Democratic primary, June the 24th. It's a hugely important office, and I hope that we can wake up some folks to kind of pay attention to this race. And Brian Frosch joins us here. He'll probably join us once again one more time before we get to that closing date of June 24th. We hope you get out and vote. There's early voting as well. And absentee ballots happening in the state of Maryland. Brian, thank you so much.
Thank you, Mark.
I want to remind you all before we get out the door here today that to join me tonight at Red Emma's. I'll be interviewing Eddie Conway at 7:30 tonight. We'll be taping it for the air. And please, you can go to redemmas.org and find out more information. Remind you, the Mark Steiner Show itself is brought to you by MeQ, Baltimore's credit union, offering a full range of financial services. MeQ, Baltimore's credit union, is helping its members and its community prosper. When you invest in yourself, MeQ invests in you. Remember, it's a credit union, not just a bank. Belongs to you. Money comes back in the end. More information, www.mecu.com, or you can go to steinershow.org and click on their banner, MeQ, Baltimore's Credit Union. And the Mark Steiner Show is a production of the Center for Emerging Media. Our producers are Stephanie Mavronis and Mark Gunnery. Our engineer is Andre Melton. Our intern is Alex Boston. And you can hear this show again, find out information about all of our guests, the work they're doing, what we talked about in the other day, by visiting steinershow.org. Also podcast our shows from there and listen to them. You can also go to iTunes and podcast and listen to all of the Mark Steiner Show programs. You're hearing under me now, Lonely Island, the Parliaments. And for Public Radio, WEAA, 88.9 FM, the voice of the community, I'm Mark Steiner. Stay tuned for Michelle Martin and Tell Me More. Take care. Talk to you tomorrow.